Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. How can we slash our risk of cancer? Well, we're going to answer that today. A study from the Chinese Academy of Medical Science and Harvard Medical School have completed a study, a really good study. So it's just one of the pieces of information that was published in the peer-reviewed journal Medicine that shows how we can live a longer life and lessen our risk of disease. Also today, we have a lot more on health and healing, including studies that show that four supplements, and this is the third study within 3 weeks to support what we've been saying for 9 months. Now, imagine if everyone used our information, all of which was backed by peer-reviewed literature because all of the information came from the Library of Medicine. Then that means that thousands upon thousands of individuals who have been sickened by COVID would probably have been infected, but not gotten sick because their immune systems would have fought it off. Just like the people who go to work every day, they're on the subways or buses, they're in offices with other people, and they don't get sick. Is it because they're uniquely different in their genetics? No, because their immune system was built properly. So we're going to continue on building the immune system properly today. But also today, it's a day of more introspection. And we're going to do several things that will take us on that level of introspection. First, a commentary on what I see as one of the most dangerous new phenomena over the last 5 years. And it's accelerating from Summit News. We're studying the cancel culture and what it means to decimating our free speech. And we're going to go further, what it means when they're now weaponizing free speech. If you say the wrong word, you can now be punished. They want to make it criminal that if you say the wrong things on the wrong topic, you could be put in jail. This is not something out of the dystopian novel Orwell wrote about 1984. This is real and happening today, and those in power are going to push this as far as they can. So if you have a nation terrified, writers of what to write, directors of what to produce, and actors what to say, commentaries that are now suddenly have to go through a cleansing process to be censored, well, it's good that we have a few institutions left that have not subscribed to the cancel culture's threats, and we're pushing back. But this is specifically about the world's leading universities. So you thought it was only a few universities, a handful of young idiots? No, it's rampant. It's like a wildfire, and it's virtually brought big academia to its knees, the cowards, the professors, gutless, shameful, despicable cowards. We have enough professors, enough teachers to stand up against this, and they won't. They're just one after the other. They're getting down on their knees, bowing their heads, and say, whatever you say, I'll go along with it. I'd rather lose my job than to submit one single thing I have to say that a culture that wants to cancel me for saying something that they did not approve. Since when does a group of individuals, young idiots, uninformed about the world, totally incapable of understanding larger issues, but thinking they're the smartest, brightest, they grew up in bubbles, more often than not all, but the majority are from the entitled class of professionals, lawyers, scientists, engineers, doctors, accountants, living on the upper end of their income. And so they don't have to live in the real world. Their kids certainly never live in the real world. Those don't. And those are the ones who are now directing everything. So we're going after them today. This is the beginning of hundreds of commentaries I'll be writing, broadcasts I'll be doing, documentaries I'm going to be filming to show you how far we've slipped into the abyss of almost a primordial intellect. We're regressing at every level at an accelerated speed thanks to artificial intelligence. I'll deal with that also, because there's something new about artificial intelligence that you should know about that I just read this morning from one of their own journals, and it's frightening. Instead of the precautionary principle, they're saying full steam ahead, even though their own scientists say we cannot control artificial intelligence. When we create it, it'll then be under its own control. What do you think about that? And it's happening now as we speak. Also today, time permitting, we will listen to a medical doctor, long career of 40 years, never a problem. He's also a senator. His name is Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, and he made the mistake of looking at some of the absurdities, the banal falsities in COVID, the alleged pandemic. He doesn't deny it's real. He doesn't deny it kills people. But he sure takes issue as a medical doctor with conflating the deaths with other deaths and also the PCR test. For that, they've gone after his license. You'll hear what he has to say. And they're going after all these doctors' licenses. Also, Brennan O'Neill. Now, some of you say, well, why Brennan? He's an avowed Marxist. So, I do not limit a person coming on this program to share their points of view because of their cultural background, their identity background. That's their business. As long as they have something to share that we could learn from, accept or reject, then that form is important. And he's going to talk about 2020 saw the most hysterical display of wokeness in American or world history. And this is just the beginning. But we always start with something upbeat and positive, and that is what we can do to change our lives for the better. Approximately 1 in 125 men and 1 in 417 women will be diagnosed with cancer, different types of cancer, of course. Some cancers, like esophageal cancer, it's low. Breast cancer, it's very high. But the point is, what can we do to help ourselves? And they're talking about, quote, that the more clementines, the more oranges and grapefruits, tangerines, and lemons that we consume, quote, significantly reduces the risk of this cancer. So just imagine now what you could do. Let's make it very practical. In the skin of the citrus, there is a particular phytonutrient. And that particular nutrient, by the way, there's also in the white pulpy part of all citrus, you have high amounts of bioflavonoids. And those have strong anti-inflammatory and anti, like quercetin, and anti-viral properties. So it's a little bitter, but if you cut up the whole organic fruit and you juice it, then all the chemicals that are in the rind are then made available for utilization at a high percentage of absorption, probably around 95% absorbed, meaning greater digestion. There's digestion, absorption, utilization, and elimination. So if you eat something, depending upon how much fiber you have, you're not going to get the full benefits. For example, I've talked a lot about ginger and why it's so important we use it. But if you eat a piece of ginger, it's very pithy. It's stringy. And you can chew on it and chew on it and chew on it. It's like chewing on a piece of celery. And the more you chew, the more you break it down, and the nutrients are allowed to be, you know, liberated. But probably 80% of what you just ate that's very rich in fiber, that's going to go right through your body undigested. But if you juice that ginger, 100% of what's important in the ginger is now liberated. Same with celery. Now, how many stalks of celery could you eat? Maybe 3. But if you juiced, you could easily juice 10 stalks of celery or the whole celery. Therefore, getting 300% more value nutritionally and at least 90% more availability, meaning more of what's in the celery, its juice, goes into your cells. That's why I'm such an advocate of juicing. In fact, just today, we're looking for a copy editor to do the final copy on a brand new book on juicing. And by the way, in the new year, to accelerate the information sharing, I'll be publishing, hopefully, if all goes well, one full major book per month. I intend to do something I've never done in my life. Bring out a book per month, a documentary every 3 months. Normally it takes a year to 2 years to do a documentary, and some documentaries, 7 years. Poverty Inc., 7 years. Death by Medicine, 7 years. Curing the Incurable, 6 years. I'm going to do one every 3 months. These are full-fledged. Why? Because I feel that now more than ever before in our history, people need to make healthy choices. All I can do is provide the opportunity, the information, and the insight, and then I walk away from it. I don't attach to the outcome. That's your responsibility. You can say, Gary, don't want to juice. That's fine. But if you do, at least you'll know how to juice, why to juice, what's in it, enzymes. I just finished writing a whole section on enzymes, the catalysts of life, the spark plugs in our body, because the average American diet is devoid of enzymes. They've been destroyed by pressure, cooking, heating, frying, grilling. Destroy them. And yet that's one of the most single important things in the American diet are enzymes. In fact, the doctor that did the most with enzymes treating cancer was Dr. Joseph Issels. And he would have people drink 10 glasses of juice a day for their enzymes. Well, I'm advocating, and the people in our anti-aging protocols, 12 glasses of juice per day. And some went above that and drank 15. And you talk about changes in their blood chemistry. It was phenomenal. First time this study's ever been done, and it showed results that really, in effect, are rejuvenating, because it's not just detoxification we'd be concerned about, meaning getting rid of the toxins in our body, but also an elimination diet that prevent them from coming into the body in the first place. So you make yourself a healthy drink instead of a cola. You make yourself a healthy meal instead of a fast food meal. Now, it's tough competition because they priced a fast food junk meal that causes disease over time so cheap that it's easier for a person to go in and buy one of these burgers for a couple bucks. Or you get, I saw one advertised yesterday for a cola, ice cream sundae, a hamburger with all kinds of bacon on it, and French fries. All four things cause disease. There's not a single healthy thing in any of those foods. The Surgeon General knows it. The head of the U.S. Public Health Service knows it. 900,000 doctors should know it. Dietitians all know it. Nutritionists all know it. And most people have enough common sense to realize it. Then why do we continue to do it? Well, your answer is as good as mine. So what would happen if we change that? Well, individually you can. Collectively, you'll never see that happen because we've been propagandized to the point that even when we're doing something that will absolutely kill us, shorten our lives, we are so conditioned and our comfort levels then are based upon our conditioning, so we don't want to take the time to make the choices. But the average person listening to this show does. That's why you listen. And I've met hundreds of thousands of you in lectures, health support groups, and I see how committed you are. That's why we continue to share this. So get your citrus juice in. Get it in once a day. One 16-ounce glass, which is not a large glass. One 16-ounce glass a day. And then have yourself a grape juice with the skin and seed. It must be seeded grapes. Once a day. You want the proanthocyanins, you want the resveratrol, you want the nutrients that are in there. So one grape juice. Then have another green juice. Green apple, celery, cucumber, ginger in that juice. And if you just do that, three juices a day, you're going to see a remarkable change in your health. Because it's turning off the inflammation, which leads to the cancer, and it's helping to also rejuvenate cells and detoxify at the same time. It's doing all those good things. That's why I want you to do it. And there's a peer-reviewed study published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention to support this. Quote, found that a high intake of green veggies in addition to citrus fruits was also cancer protective. Good. Now, here are the nutrients that the latest studies are showing, and this is from the Eastern Virginia Medical School, show will help protect you. Now, mind you, there's so many things that they do beyond COVID, but we're only talking about COVID. And there was a Dr. Peter Osborne with the Nutrition Center that showed how this all works. I'm just going to give you the short lineup. And these, for example, the number one is vitamin D. Now, unfortunately, we're taking too little vitamin D. When I have people who are older and have comorbidities, they're on much higher protocols. And not one of those people has ended up going to the hospital. But otherwise, I'm sure they would have. Many died. Because vitamin D is needed when you have a hyperinflammation in the cytokine, C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E, storm that comes with COVID, meaning you have a greater risk of getting into a situation where they're going to put you on a ventilator. Now, they should put you into hyperbaric oxygen so your lungs continue to work, but the pressure is taken off because of high oxygenation. By the way, high oxygen from a hyperbaric oxygen thermometer is the best possible therapy you could have for cancer, any cancer. And yet they don't use it for a single cancer. That's how tied into they are to the limitations of some of their protocols. So when a person's on a ventilator with COVID, that's not healthy. The outcomes are really bad unless you're taking ivermectin. And by the way, good study, and it's showing that the National Institute of Health is now considering adding ivermectin to the schedule along with zinc. And there's 30 studies now, all showing positive outcome, none showing negative outcome. And if you take it early, and not even in high doses, I've seen anywhere from a maintenance level of, for health workers, of 3 milligrams a day, which is small, and no side effects, no harmful side effects, up to therapeutic doses for people who are manifesting symptoms of around somewhere neighborhood of about 20 milligrams. So we're talking about low doses. Even with hydroxychloroquine, you're talking about 200 milligrams, low dose maintenance for health workers, or people who are in comorbid positions, nursing homes, up to 400. Phenomenal results. By the way, we're up to over 150 studies supporting the use, 90% of them support the use of hydroxychloroquine. But at least that's coming. So now you want to build up your vitamin D. So if you're a patient and you get hospitalized, they should be putting you on between 20 to 60,000 units of vitamin D. That should be standard care protocol in the hospital system. And vitamin D is one of the most simple and affordable and non-toxic nutrients you can take into your body. All right? And then if you're completely healthy and young, 2,000 units a day, that's fine. But then vitamin C. We know that vitamin C intravenous works. There's two major studies in China and Yuan that showed that the people who had COVID, not just asymptomatic, but full COVID, were given intravenous vitamin C. And even a low dose, 24,000 milligrams a day, they recovered and responded. But orally, make sure you're breaking your vitamin C up 6 times a day. Upon arising in the morning, then in late morning, early afternoon, early evening, and before you go to bed at night. After all, a lot of strokes happen in the middle of the night, and that's why you want to have your blood thinned. That's why magnesium, L-carnitine, vitamin C, quercetin are all important when you're sleeping, because they keep the blood thin, the heart strong, the mitochondria functioning. So vitamin C throughout the day, and then zinc anywhere. It stops viral replication multiple ways. So it prevents the virus from hijacking your DNA, preventing the virus from replicating. And that's important. And it also prevents the virus from entering the cell. So zinc is, here's the irony, zinc is more important than either hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, but it is what actually does the killing, where the others help facilitate blocking the virus and helping to make it easier for that zinc to do its job. And then, of course, you have the superstar of superstars, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And that is a natural bioflavonoid. It opens up the cell in your body so that zinc can get inside your cell where it does its great job. So remember, quercetin is the key, and zinc is the locksmith. So you want a new lock, zinc, and you want the ability to do it, quercetin. So those are things that make a difference. I'm Gary Nall. We are 21 minutes into our program, and we always start with ways that everybody can benefit. But now we're going to go to some other things before we take our break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to hear from the good doctor about how he told the truth from 40 years of experience, never a problem, and now he's threatened with his license. And that's true of all these doctors standing up across the country. So let's see what happens when thousands upon tens of thousands are threatened with their career, they're being shamed, they're being deplatformed, they're being wiped off YouTube, and that's happening as we speak when they start to get other doctors so they can hold a national strike against them being destroyed because they're telling the truth to Anthony Fauci's lies. But what we have is we have something that's insidious. This started before COVID, and that is the right of a small group of people to decide that you should not have a chance to say anything that they might feel offended by or disagree with. So they now have to filter everything to make sure that they don't feel uncomfortable. So a new study by a leading education-focused think tank, Citavus, has found that free speech, quote, at the world's leading university, from Summit, this report, quote, the study found that within the past 3 years, more than 68% of universities in the United Kingdom have seen free speech severely restricted, with academics unable to meaningfully discuss the nuances of issues such as race and gender. The report notes that universities, including, we're talking about Oxford, Cambridge, and St. Andrews, and by the way, for those of you who are not familiar with Europe and Great Britain, these are right up there with Sorbonne. These are the top universities, three top universities in probably the world. And these are the ones that have fallen, quote, into a, quote, red category for free speech following instances of no platforming, meaning anyone coming to give a lecture, if one student didn't like you or what you represented or anything about your ethnicity or culture or gender, whatever reason, you were canceled. You couldn't teach at that university. You couldn't speak at that university. You were destroyed. Did you have a chance to face your challenger? No. To refute their false allegations? No. You were guilty. And in fact, the study warns that the situation has gotten so bad that it requires government legislation to stop campus censorship at 48 of the world's leading universities. And give you an idea, that's 35% of all major educational institutions in that area. Also, 70 institutions, over half placed into an amber category, have experienced restrictions on freedom of expression that should be looked into by University Watchdog, the Office of Students, for students. And then the universities are stacking upon one another people who are there to support the censorship, not the professors or not the lecturers. This is a part of cancel culture. And these are all manipulated by external pressure groups. The pressure groups don't want you to speak. You don't speak. They don't want you into their country. You're not allowed into their country. So this is what we're faced with. The fundamental issue must be dealt with because students and academics find themselves in educational institutions in which they cannot speak freely, openly, honestly on any of the leading subjects for fear that some student will take issue and then file a Chapter 9, which means you don't know who filed it and you have to pay for your own defense. And they put you through like a star chamber, an inquisition. And a lot of people are leaving the profession of teaching because of this, and that's unfortunate. So what we have seen is, quote, the racialization of campus relations driving a wedge between students and undermines any sense of our common humanity. That's it. Just want to bring that to your attention. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from the doctor, and then I'm going to play you something that I feel is probably the most straightforward challenge to what is happening in the United States today. It's from Tucker Carlson. Now, Tucker and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum on probably six major issues, including the environment and big time. But on this, I'd like for you to hear what he has to say, because this is happening now. It's not theoretical. It's been accelerating, and now we can expect this nonstop. And this goes to the question I raised yesterday. What happens when we have no check and balance on power, where you only have one? Imagine going into a court, and the police officer says, arrest you. And the police officer arrests you, and you say, but what did I do? Well, I think that your car that you're driving in, this nice-looking car, I think that you transmitted drugs in it. I don't do drugs. I didn't transport drugs. But I think you did. And today, I'm going to take all the money you have. I'm going to take your credit cards and whatever the maximum credit you have. I'm going to take this little machine. I'm going to delete it all out so it goes from your bank account to mine. And because I am the judge, I am the jury, and I'm the executioner. But shouldn't I be given a hearing? Are you going to arrest me? No, I'm not going to arrest you. Are you going to give me a ticket? No, I'm not going to give you anything. And by the way, we're going to get away with it because the mainstream media is not going to be critical, and the legislators are not going to be critical, and the sheriffs and police officers are not going to be critical. The judges are not critical, and we've done it $74 billion. And that's a true story. So how would you feel about that? That anyone who stops you automatically can convict you and punish you? Well, that's similar to Obama's National Defense Authorization Act, or Joe Biden, he's one of the leading sponsors of the Patriot Act. What happens when there is no balance? And look when we had balance. Remember when Chris Hedges would appear on MSNBC and CNN, and remember Glenn Greenwald and Max Blumenthal and Abby Martin? When was the last time you saw any of them on any of the programs offering an opinion or offering a challenge? How about zero? What happened to Glenn Ford and other strong liberal voices from the African-American community? When was the last time you saw them on after they challenged Obama's policy and many policies? Okay. Just remember, when we have no check or balance to the existing power, you have tyranny. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I have a question for you today. Who next? Well, for now, it's me again. I got my letter a day and a half ago from the Board of Medical Practice that I'm being investigated again, and my medical license is at risk. This time, it's because I am showing videos that contain false and misleading information and conclusions. I'm doing videos that falsely compare and minimize the difference between the 2009 H1N1 pandemic and COVID-19 pandemic. And lastly, this anonymous accuser called me a danger to public health. So here I am again. For the last day and a half, I've been composing a response and putting it together for the Board of Medical Practice. I've said this before, if it can happen to me, couldn't it happen to you also? This is a danger, and I think we need to talk about it. Let's not kid ourselves. The cancel culture, the muzzling of a perspective that you don't like, this is happening. But the fact of the matter is, COVID-19 has opened a door into a tremendously vicious political non-discussion. I received an article in a magazine or journal that I read, the American Journal of Medicine, and in it, Dr. Joseph Alpert talked about a couple of political things from his perspective. He suggested that we have a universal one-week lockdown every year in remembrance of COVID-19. He said, for a week, once a year, we could put on face masks in public, wash our hands frequently, keep the kids at home, perform our work at home as much as possible, and try not to drive or fly. Seriously? He went on to say, following the current pandemic, our next challenge will be dealing with climate change. 2 days ago, we had the top public health official in Canada come out and say that when you're having sex, you should wear a mask. And that the lowest risk of sexual activity during COVID-19 involves yourself alone. I think I remember what that's called. There's an article today talking about what we're doing to kids. The organization PATH, P-A-T-H, came out and said that we may have more than 2 million people die in the first year of pandemic entirely due to causes having nothing to do with the pandemic, but instead dropping rates of immunizations, disease diagnosis and treatment, family planning, mental health disorders, cancer diagnosis, increased domestic abuse, increased child abuse, increased suicide, and simply starvation. It's political. I'm going to deal with the Board of Medical Practice. I'm going to respond, and I appreciate the fact that they have a mission to accomplish. But I have to ask, who are we? This is a time of censorship. This is a time of vehement anger. I want to ask you one question. Do you remember Martin Niemöller when he said, first they came for the socialists and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. So even if we think that me or someone else is sort of getting their comeuppance for being such a contrarian or such a skeptic, that it's okay and you might have sort of a quiet private celebration? I don't think you should. When these things happen, they affect all of us. This is a deep, dark place we're going. And there is a legitimate fear that the cure, the response, is worse than the problem itself. So, am I a danger to public health? And if I am, is it because I'm a skeptic? Or maybe you, are you a danger to public health? Folks, kids are at risk.
Okay, he asked an important and legitimate question. What happens when there's something within the official narrative that you disagree with? I've disagreed with the American diet my entire career. At every stage of my career, they've tried to shut me down and close me off. And in some ways, they have succeeded. In other ways, they haven't. But think of all the people that did not have a platform. Think of the people that they didn't have a group of people who are able to carry forward and support. If we ask for a demonstration, a legitimate demonstration, there'll be people who show up because they know how important it is for them to participate in not keeping quiet when they know they should be speaking on these issues. I have offered this forum for the victims of the side effects of vaccination, yet I am not ever telling people don't vaccinate. In fact, I believe if there is a safe and effective vaccine, it should be used if there's no casualties. The trouble is I have yet to find such a vaccine, and it certainly does not, it does not pass the smell test when every toxicological journal shows that almost every ingredient in all the commonly used and scheduled vaccines are themselves toxic above levels that would be allowed if you got that exposure of mercury or aluminum from any other source. For example, if you went into a doctor's office and you asked the doctor to shoot into a spoon all the ingredients that are in a vaccine and then to drink that, that doctor would lose their license. But if they inject it into your arm, there's no problem. The hypocrisy is palpable. Why don't they ever tell you about the toxic ingredients and do a story? Why doesn't the New York Times say, we decided to look into the ingredients, and here's what we found on polysorbate 80. Here's what we found on formaldehyde, embalming fluid. Here's all the different studies on aluminum as an adjuvant. There's 4,000 studies. Every one of them show toxicity at any dose. So if you put them all together, then you're taking in anywhere from 10 to 20 ingredients, all of them toxic, none of them beneficial to the body. And everything else is a theoretical mathematical model. It's not based on good science. Well, then people would begin to question it. And virtually no one questioned vaccines until it was their child. Then suddenly they say, where are the advocates? There are no advocates. No one in government, no one at the CDC, no one at the FDA, no one at the U.S. Public Health Service. No one is going to defend you. To the contrary, they make it virtually an impossible challenge to get compensation so you can pay for the treatment, which is not covered by insurance, of your child's autism. So that's what we're dealing with. So just think deeper and look at the broader picture. And now they're coming for the doctors, regular doctors. He's pro-vaccine. He's pro-everything any other doctor in America is pro. He is not an alternative or company doctor. But because he spoke out about some aspect, they went after him. And there's a lot more they're going after because of that. So should we stay silent? And by the way, talking about not being silent, tonight, you talk about a powerful hour. The progressive commentary hour tonight, a real doctor talks about the social dilemma we're faced with. And Reiner Fulmich, the lawyer who is bringing together all these lawsuits to start suing Fauci and governments and individuals and corporations, that'll be a powerful hour you will not want to miss. 7 o'clock, PRN.FM. One of the most articulate, impassioned voices for reason is Brendan O'Neill. He grew up with a background as a classical Marxist, but set that aside for a moment because nothing that he is saying is based upon an ideology. He doesn't try to get people involved in his political beliefs. It's what he is concerned about that is happening to people's reputation, a lack of freedom of speech, the cancel culture, and I believe that what he has to say, we could think about. And again, with all my guests or all the people whose videos I post, it's about not agreeing or disagreeing, but can it challenge our thoughts in a way that it opens up to a deeper and more broad-based perspective.
Let's get this show going. First of all, in the excellent company of Spiked Online editor and social commentator Brendan O'Neill. Good morning, Brendan.
Hi, Kevin.
I wanted to sort of do a general thing with you. We've had a terrible year, clearly. I don't think we need to dwell on the obvious downsides of what we've been through, the lockdowns, the tears, the circuit breakers, the fire breakers, the destruction of the economy. And by the way, none of these measures seem to have worked. I'm not quite sure why we keep locking down when it's proved that all the other lockdowns didn't work. But that seems to be a function of this government's strange madness. But what worries me, Brendan, is under the radar of these huge changes to the way we've been living, you know, to this coronavirus crisis, which has been such a profound changer of our life, of our society, of our freedoms. things have been happening almost under the radar. And I think that the most worrying thing that happened in this past year has been the rise and rise of wokery. What I want you to do is to look forward to this time next year. Do you think, we'll cover a number of subjects, but do you think that wokery will have been defeated by this year, or at least that the people, the sensible people of this country, will have fought back against it?
That's the big question. I mean, I'm generally an optimist, but the reason I'm a little bit pessimistic about that particular issue is because in 2020, we were facing one of the most serious health crises of recent times. We thought that people would pull together and work together and, you know, act as a society, act as a broader community. But in fact, what actually happened is that the divisive ideology of wokeness got worse and worse and worse. And it really exploded with the Black Lives Matter protests after the brutal killing of George Floyd. And what we had in the wake of those protests was the most hysterical display of wokeness we've ever had. We had people banning old comedy shows because they were supposedly offensive. We had people pulling down statues or putting graffiti on statues. We had museums like the British Museum, the British Library, and others basically self-flagellating themselves for their ancient links to slavery. I mean, it really was an orgy of self-hatred and wokeness and divisiveness. And if that can happen in 2020, when we're all meant to pull together in the face of a serious problem, then I'm pretty sure it could happen in 2021 too. So I'm a tiny bit worried, to be honest.
Yeah, I am too. But what I would like the government to do, let's give it a bit of a break. Over the past year, it has had some massive issues to deal with and to be preoccupied by. Given that perhaps the next year might not be quite so pressing in terms of coronavirus, and certainly not in terms of getting the Brexit deal done, could this Tory administration raise its game and get to grips with this wokery problem? Because it should not have been a Conservative administration that allowed the rise and rise of this madness. As you say, this used to be a serious country. It is not serious to start blaming people who live now for something that their ancestors did 350 years ago. It is not serious to throw statues into the sea because this person was a slave trader and rather a philanthropist, by the way, a person who helped Bristol insofar as he could. And it is not serious for our museums to start removing artifacts because they are linked to the slave trade. This is all the action of a shallow and mad country. We didn't used to be like this, and the Tories should not have let this happen to us. Can we retrieve our common sense and our seriousness?
We need to. I mean, that's the key point that needs to be made. I'm really surprised, as you say, that this happened under a Conservative government. To a certain extent, they allowed it to happen, or at least they weren't as forthright during the hysteria of wokeness over the past few months. They weren't as forthright as they might have been in defending British traditions, defending British history, defending British values, and sending a signal that we will not tolerate this screeching, hysterical, censorious culture that really comes from the kind of media elites and radical leftists and other sections of the kind of political class. That's the signal they should have sent. And I think what the Conservative Party doesn't seem to realise is that they would make themselves very popular. Yes. If they were to criticise this craziness, if they were to criticise the excesses of gender fluidity, the idea that you can click your fingers and change sex, if they were to criticise the notion that all of British history is just a litany of crimes, one horror after another, if they were to criticise the idea that Britain is a horrible, racist country and no one should take pride in it, if they were to criticise those things, those ideas, they would win a lot of support among particularly Red Wall voters, those former Labour voters who gave their support to the Tory party this year, in December. They would win the support of all of those people and many others too. So they need some bravery, they need some backbone, they need to start facing down these divisive ideologies and putting Britain back on the straight and narrow.
Is it possible for the government to ban from our schools the teaching of critical race theory? This nonsense about telling little kids who happen to be white that although they don't think they're racist and although all their best friends are BAME people, they really are racist. And of course, this goes up to organisations like the BBC, which is currently telling all of its employees who are white that they are the beneficiaries of white privilege. This is a fact, according to the diversity director, June Sarpong, who gets $75,000 a year for doing 3 days a week. She has talked only 2 days ago about the problem of elite white males. Even working class white people have got a much better deal than the BAME community. Again, this preaching of racism, of prejudice, telling us all that you didn't think you were prejudiced, but you are. If it seeps into, if it infests an organisation like the BBC, and while we're at it, might as well throw the National Trust in with that and our museums, we are in trouble. We need to get rid of this nonsense, don't we? We need to get the BBC not to have a creative diversity director. We need the BBC not to come up with 55 pages of nonsense about why the BBC isn't diverse enough. I mean, it just so happens the BBC is incredibly undiverse, but the BBC should be concentrating on making good programmes that people want to watch, not polishing its own halo about its own wonderfulness. Same goes for the National Trust. Just keep the houses nice so we can go and the stately homes so we can go and visit them. Don't bother, you know, sainting yourself, becoming saints about your magnificent lack of racism and getting rid of it. It's nonsense. We need to do something about this, don't we?
Absolutely. And we have to do something about critical race theory, especially in schools. It is a toxic ideology because it is dividing kids. You know, we live, there was a racism problem in this country a few decades ago. And I'm sure, of course, racism still exists. But the story of this country is that it has become one of the least racist countries in the world. Black and white people and people from all backgrounds mix and work and educate themselves together every single day. And now what we have are these new elites going into schools, going into universities, going into public institutions and saying, listen, white people, you're all racist, even if you think you're not. Listen, black people, you're all victims and everyone hates you and everything else. And it's dividing people. It's saying that blacks and whites will never truly understand each other because their experiences are too different. That is a divisive, hyper-racial ideology. And someone like June Sarpong actually sums up the problem with this culture, because here's a woman, an accomplished broadcaster who now works at the BBC, who gets paid, as you say, $75,000 a year for 3 days a week of work. And she is saying to even to working class white people and poor white people, she is saying, even you have privilege. So this is a woman who lives a very nice life on a wage that is paid for by us. Poor white people face criminal sanction if they don't pay their TV license and they own a TV. They pay her wages. She turns around and says to them, you are privileged and you need to educate yourselves. This is like a new form of feudalism. We have this feudalistic class of people who are looking down their noses at ordinary people, calling them privileged, calling them racist, calling them backward, essentially. This can't go on. I think it is so insulting and so demeaning. We need a country that pulls together as part of a national project rather than this divisive politics of identity.
Yeah, June has just released her third book. Sounds like a real page turner. I couldn't pick it up. It's called The Power of Privilege, How White People Can Challenge Racism. She spoke about the power imbalances in our riven society and said, the thing about modern privilege is that you're the beneficiary. If you're the beneficiary, often you're unaware that you're the beneficiary. And that's the whole point, isn't it? Because the default is white and everything that isn't is other. I mean, this thinking is just moronic and it is a massive problem. The people have to rise up against this, because you and I have discussed this before, Brendan. There is no doubt that 99.9999% of the population of Britain think the same as us about this wokery, that it is a pernicious nonsense and they want nothing of it. And yet the minority, the very small minority, the noisy minority, are calling all the shots and dictating what's happened. Corporations quake in their boots rather than offend Extinction Rebellion, and so on and so forth. We need the government to get behind the people, to stand up and to stop all this nonsense, because it's insane. And as I said earlier, it is making us less of a serious country.
That's right. It is it's an elitist ideology. It is not shared by the vast majority of people in this country. And, you know, when Jun Sarpong talks about in her new book, which will be about how white people can save themselves, essentially, improve yourselves, lift yourselves up. There's so many books and educational courses now devoted to fixing white people. Apparently, white people have these ingrained problems. They're all racist. They're all horrible. They're all problematic people. And, you know, that used to be said about black people. What the racists used to say in the old days is there's a problem with black people. They have these internal problems. We need to save them. We need to fix them. We need to improve them. If someone can explain to me how it is progressive to go from racializing black people, which I think was repugnant, to now racializing white people and saying they are the problem, they are the cause of every ill in our society, white men in particular, they are behind every bad thing that happens. If someone can explain to me how it's progressive to go from one form of racialism to another, I'd be very happy to hear that. The truth is, this demonization of white people is just disgusting. The majority of people in this country are white. The majority of them are not racist. And white working class kids are doing fairly badly at the moment in the educational system. Loads of people in this country, white and black, have lost their jobs in 2020 as a result of the lockdowns. What we need is people coming together, especially working class people, to improve their conditions in life. We don't need lectures from pampered people at the BBC about how privileged we all are. That's really the last thing this country needs right now.
This is another quote from June. She says, I think that the minute many white people understand that, and what she's talking about, understand that we are the problem, that we white people, they stand up and they say, this is June, my God, I never knew. I want to be part of the solution. This is an insanity that has to stop. And really, my last question, Brennan, is about the exclusion of the people. That's what's happened over the past year. This wokery, the province of the elite, the people who get 75 grand a year for working 3 days doing a non-job at the BBC, those kind of people, they have been able to impose all their North London liberal wokist ideas on the population. While the population has been sort of suppressed, we've been cut out, and nowhere is that more evident than in the world of football. You know, no fan I know wants to see the players take the knee every match for Black Lives Matter, and yet they carry on. Every fan has made it known they don't want to see this anymore. It's silly, it's empty, it achieves nothing. And yet the football authorities basically say, we don't care about the normal public, you know, the ordinary public, the people who pay our wages, the people who come and watch us play football. We don't care what they think. We're going to do what we think. And that is what I think the government has to stand up for this year, is to say, no. Brexit, disgracefully, took 4 years to do. It was, and that delay was about suppressing what people, the ordinary people, actually wanted and voted for. And we've got this going on everywhere at the moment, particularly in football with the taking the knee. We need the government to get behind the people so the people can be listened to in this year.
That's right. And I think you're absolutely right. The story of 2020 has been the expulsion of ordinary people from the public sphere, from public debate, from public life. And that's one of the key reasons why these new divisive elitist groups could have such an impact on politics. And, you know, what happened when football fans were allowed back into the stadium for the first time? Of course, they registered their disapproval of the Black Lives Matter movement, not the idea that Black Lives Matter. They registered their disapproval of that divisive movement by booing. So that was a really heartening moment, in my view, of this year, because that represented the return of ordinary people, the return of common sense. The story of this country at the moment is the disconnect between what the chattering classes think and what ordinary people think. The chattering classes tend to be anti-Brexit, pro-woke. They believe everyone's racist and they think Britain is a horrible country. Ordinary people are in large part pro-Brexit. They believe in democracy. They don't want the politics of identity and they think Britain is a pretty good country. Any party that speaks for that majority will do very well. And that's why some parties got to discover a backbone and do precisely that.
Well, Brendan, I want to thank you for all your help over the years. It's always been a privilege to talk to you. And let's keep our fingers crossed. Let's try and stay optimistic for a much better 2021. All the best, Brendan. Take care. Brendan O'Neill there, editor of Spiked Online, social commentator. Looking forward to what we all hope will be a vastly improved 2021. Let's face it, it couldn't be much worse than 2020.
I'm concerned. For our listeners on WBAI, we're out of time. We want to thank you. For everyone else, we're carrying forward with another 5 minutes on PRN.fm. And don't forget, tonight at 7 o'clock, a powerful hour. You're going to hear stuff I promise you no other media in America is going to share with you. Now, I asked 2 weeks ago, for those of you who have found some remarkable experiences coming to our retreats, and we do these as a support for WBAI, to call in. And we had two callers come in, and one called in yesterday, but unfortunately they had written a wonderful letter, is from what I understand, and sent it over to Luann, and then Luann said, well, just call Gary and read the letter on the air. Anyhow, I didn't have time. It was not the right time. And I don't know who that person is. If they want to call back, that's fine. But we do have a person, I'm told right now, named Eduardo, who attended a retreat. Hi, Eduardo.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good. You and I have not spoken, correct? The retreat, that was months and months, almost 6 months ago. In any case, tell the audience what you experienced during your stay there.
Well, I all experienced wonderful things. That's all I can say. You know, from the time I arrived, from the time I left, my upbringing, the knowledge that I learned throughout the betterment of my life in terms of health, spiritual health, physical health, and all that accounts to a better day, every day that you get up and feel better about yourself and improve yourself to do better things to you and to others around you. And I mean, the time that we spent together, you, your staff, with you, and with the people that were all together, everybody helping each other, learning from each other. There was a wonderful time that I had together. So I see that as a way of life in terms of when you get up in the morning, you have an opportunity to do better for yourself and to others. And it's a learning lesson every day that you are in this planet, let's put it that way.
So since returning home, you've been able to change your diet to make it a healthier diet, your lifestyle to be more engaging with your family and friends, to spend quality time on yourself with hobbies and things that allow you to feel joy each day?
Yes. I mean, as a human being, we have our faults, but I try to do that on a daily basis, try to do better.
Good for you. Yes. I'm glad to hear that. Well, thank you, Eduardo, for calling in. And in the future, anyone who's had an experience of growth and change that they're able to take home the messages and apply it, actualize it, call in. We'd like to hear from you. Now, for those of you who are interested in one of two things, there's two things going to be happening the last 2 weeks of April. One is a very advanced anti-aging clinical study. We want highly motivated people, people who are not resistant to change, people who are very disciplined, so that you can do all the things. And we, for example, part of this is just watching classical philosophical classes from some of the great teachers like Joseph Campbell, and also when we're working out, very challenging workout twice a day, juicing, proper supplementation, counseling, one-on-one counseling, great meals, yoga, meditation, a drumming meditation, and to see what we can do to change your blood chemistry, to change your telomeres, to change your body's biochemistry, so you're actually starting a process of de-aging. That's one. The other is people who just like that have a chance to be in a beautiful, serene, bucolic environment with bumblebees. We have lots of hives and butterflies and great aromas from the aromatic gardens, and there are many aromatic gardens, and to de-stress, to be able to relax, to catch up on the de-stressing that you haven't done on a regular basis, so that you can have all the food and juices you want, come home reinvigorated. It's a big, big deal to do that for yourself, to give yourself that gift. And rarely do we. We get so busy with everything, we don't take the time for self. So if you want to take some quality time for yourself and be around a great staff, John Q, who's going to be doing water aerobics in our saltwater pool, power walking, he and I take people out in the gym, and no matter what your physical condition, he'll be helping you. Luann will be doing her one-on-one counseling, I'll be doing lectures, and we have a lot of staff who are all, almost all the people have overcome own obstacles in their life, and therefore they're growing. You can call Luann Panessi, and I'll give you her number, and then we'll get you signed up if there's room. I don't know how much room there is, but we'll let you know. You got to be screened by Luann, either way. Luann's number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Thank you all for listening, and listen tonight, 7 o'clock. Have a nice day, everyone.